bangs or in three?
Yes, well, they would obviously try to avoid you, the rats, but like any vermin, they would get, if they lived with you, they would get more and more familiar. You would often find that them running across your face on a night time when you was laid in your bunk, in your sleeping bag, and sometimes they would sit in the middle of the floor looking at you, defying you. Of course, if you made a move, they would scatter, but a favourite pastime of lads during the day was to lay in their bunk with their rifle or their Sten gun and sit very quietly and wait while the rats come out and then shoot them. So there was quite numerous on certain positions.
Were they like British rats or were they a different colour?
As far as I recall, there was very much like British rats, you know, just medium-sized rat-looking. Yeah, just ordinary rats.
What about the snakes? Were they not poisonous?
Well, we made a few inquiries with the Koreans. I don't think there was any that was actually dangerous, poisonous, although they did tell us that certain types could make you ill. I remember one Korean, we caught several snakes, myself and somebody else, and he was pointing them out, and he says, that one okay, that one okay, that one make you very sick. But, you know, a snake's a snake half the time, and you tend to give it a wide berth anyway with it, no matter what it was like. Although there wasn't all that numerous, but occasionally they did fall into the slit trenches, which used to cause a little bit of a panic sometimes, but there was no problem, really. There was never in the bunkers.
So they wouldn't try to strike at you with their fangs?
No, I don't recall of anybody being bitten by one. I think they would they kept well out of the way. The only time they happened to they used to fall in the slit trenches, you see, and obviously they couldn't get out straight away until they found their way out.
What about things like fleas, lice, bugs?
Don't recall any. Don't recall. Mosquitoes was a problem at times, at certain times of the year. A big problem. We had to take our Paladin tablets, anti-malaria tablets, daily, which was no problem. There was only a little tiny thing like a saccharin tablet. And providing that you took those daily, there was no problem. Although mosquitoes can give you a nasty bite, and you got a lot of discomfort with them, but no illness. And as for fleas and bugs, etc., I don't think there was a problem really.
Did you use mosquito nets?
We'd like to have done, but that was totally impractical when he was actually in the front line. So we didn't use them much, no. We used to try to use the mosquito netting over your face if possible, but it was very impractical, really.
How did you find your clothing as far as the weather was concerned? Did you find that it did protect you from the weather?
Yeah, I think it was adequate, really. Providing that you did use everything. The problem was that it was the night, really, that was very, very cold. If you used to use everything, you would put on your long johns, which is just the normal type, you know, underwear, long john underwear. And then you had a pair of fleecy under trousers, which were very thick. And then you put your combat suit on, which had a double lining. Now that was fine if you was just sitting there in the cold, but as soon as you started being active, then you could get a little bit too warm. Or during the day you might get a little bit too warm, which meant that you had to take something off. And so it was this taking on and off that was the problem. Now this meant that you invariably found that you was leaving things off, and so on a night time you did suffer with the cold. But There was not a lot you could do about it, because if you went on a standing patrol, the idea of a standing patrol was just to stay in one spot and keep very, very quiet. Now this meant that you were just sat down or crouched down somewhere, so obviously you was going to get cold, and there wasn't a lot you could do about it. Your feet got cold.
Did people actually get frostbite?
I don't recall of a single case of frostbite. No doubt there would be some, but certainly not who I was in contact with.
How long would you be in the front line at a time?
At a time? I think it varied, but I would think somewhere around about a month on average. And then you came back, reorganised, and then sometimes you was a couple of days in reserve, and then you went to another position. As I recall, I think we went in the line about probably 5 or 6 different times. So you could say 3 weeks, a month, or 5 weeks. I think it all depended on the powers that be, you know, it's when they decided to pull you out.
Why was Yongdong such a quiet position, do you think?
I think it was practically inaccessible, really. It was a very, very high hill. It was, in fact, it was one of the few hills that was actually named on the Korean map. Most of them went on a number, you know, the contour number, or feet above sea level, or whatever. They were known as numbers. But Yongdong was an actual feature of the Samicheon Valley, which was very, very high. And it would take an awful lot of attacking to get up there. And so consequently, I believe that was why it was, although it was a key position, I would have thought, because it was a corner of the Samicheon Valley. But it was it would take a lot of attacking, you know, to control it. And so I think that was why it was relatively quiet. And with it being a key area, of course, it had been occupied by our forces for a long time. And so it was pretty heavily fortified with barbed wire, etc. So it was relatively safe, I think.
And did you say the hill was called Face Hill? F-A-C-E. Face Hill?
No, I don't think so.
What was the hill called?
The hill was called Yongdong. Now, I say it was a feature of the Samicheon Valley, and it was actually marked on the map Yongdong.
Which was the most active position that you went to that you recollect?
Oh, that was the Hook, without a doubt.
What was the situation there?
Well, the situation there was that when we was on Yongdong, for example, which was only about a mile from the Hook, the Black Watch was attacked on the Hook. And then when we went on the Hook, we was attacked on the Hook. And there was always something going on. Practically every night, there was small attacks somewhere round about the Hook area. So it was very, very active. You were literally, at certain parts, joined to the enemy with nothing in between you, sort of thing. There was no valley in between you. And you were very, very close. And it was a strategic position, the Hook. So it was a very important piece which we had to defend at all costs, and I think the Chinese would have liked to have controlled it. So consequently, they constantly attacked the Hook.
Were you attacked whilst you were at the Hook?
We were attacked, yes, in May, I think, May 52. We were attacked on the Hook, yeah.
Can you describe in detail what you recollect of that Chinese attack?
Describe indeed. There's so much happened that it's impossible to describe it all. I know it was probably the most traumatic occasion that of my life. We knew an attack was imminent, really, because we'd been shelled there day after day, night after night. We'd lost a few men on patrols and with motorbombs. And I gathered from the O groups, the intelligence thought that we would be eventually be attacked. And it was round about, I forget the exact date, I think it was something like the 28th of May. They started shelling about, we were just waiting to go on stand two, which would be about 6 o'clock, 6:30. And they started shelling, and the shells literally came down like machine gun bullets, as fast as that, but those motor bombs. And within 10 minutes, I think, all the slit trenches leading on the front line seemed to be flat, or practically flattened. So we knew that there was coming, without a doubt. And they did come. My company was just to the right of the hook on a feature called Sausage, which was part of the hook. The company on the hook proper was D Company.
What was the effect of the shelling, of the mortaring?
Well, the effect was that all the slit trenches had gone, or the biggest part, so it was dangerous actually getting round to your Bren pits. How we got round without losing a man, I don't know. And the shelling kept on for best part of an hour, I suppose. And then we saw relatively little where we was on Sausage. It was just a question of firing our machine guns. We knew that there was attacking up these features called Greenfinger and Warsaw was just to the left of us, and by the occasional flare that went up, well, not the occasional flare, there was practically flares all the time, it was like daylight at times, we could see vast amounts of Chinese coming along the feature. And so it was just a question of firing and sending mortar bombs, etc. And this went on till, for us it went on till midnight, 1 o'clock. But I think on the hook proper, it didn't actually finish well early hours of the morning sometime.
Could you see whether you were hitting the Chinese or not?
Not individually, you couldn't. There was so much going on that you fired your Bren gun, you just fired your full magazine. In fact, we fired until the barrels of the Bren gun was actually glowing in the dark. It was changing barrels and doing all sorts of things. You'd no time to sight as such and kill somebody, if that's what you mean. No. You just kept firing and firing, and there's all sorts of things going on. It was so, we had a mortar bomb dropped just outside the back of the Bren pit, which blew us all to the ground, and one man was hit, and we had to take him to the HQ company, the medic post, you know. One dropped out the outside, I got blasted in the face, finished up with a black eye, which made me groggy for half an hour. There was so much, it was all happening, you see, that you'd no time to collect your thoughts. And even looking back, you have a job remembering specific things, you know, because it was so, well, like, exciting is the wrong word, but It was so much going on at different parts, and you were getting so many different orders and shouting and screaming that it was just chaos. You know.
How did the Chinese conduct their infantry attack? Were they taking cover? And
no, they I think they call it the human wave, don't they? They're just attacking a company at a time. And when one wave's finished, they carry on with another wave. I understand that the first wave have weapons, the second wave hasn't. The second wave has to rely on picking up the weapons that the first wave dropped. And then the third wave carry spades and what have you for digging in. You know, I think they're organised that way. I don't think every single Chinaman had a weapon. I think the vast majority didn't have. They just rely on human waves picking weapons up or making use of themselves when they get on the position that they're attacking.
So they weren't dodging from boulder to boulder?
Oh, no. No, they just charge it until they hit the wire. And then they throw themselves on the wire. And it's just a mass. You can't really tell what's going on at the time. You know,
so they just throw themselves on the wire to be killed on the wire?
I believe that they used to strap what they call a Bangalore torpedo on them and throw themselves off across the wire, and the Bangalore torpedo went off, which blew them to pieces and would make a hole in the wire. And it's surprising that no matter how much wire there is there, barbed wire, after you've had this barrage of mortar shells, there's obviously blows huge gaps in the wire. And so they can obviously get through, no problem. Yeah.
So did it really seem to be a suicide attack?
I think there was suicide attack, but they obviously had a motive. They did get on the hook. Yeah, before they withdrew, they did get on the hook. The orders was on the hook that I think we were supposed to get into tunnels and then call a DF down, which is a defensive fire. And so anybody who was left on the hook in the open would come under heavy mortar fire. Whether that actually happened or not on the hook proper, I really don't know. You'd have to ask somebody that was actually on the hook proper.
From D Company?
From D Company, yes.
What did you think of the Chinese yourself as an enemy? What was your estimate of them?
Well, I couldn't form an opinion because we were never really come into contact. The only time we come into contact was when peace was declared, and I didn't personally, although some friends of mine did, and we went out to meet them in no man's land. And I was surprised how young they were, was one impression I got. And they were really likeable kids, sort of thing. There was kids very much the same as what we were. When I first went there, I thought the Chinese enemy was a sort of an old-type soldier. But it turned out there was just young lads, like you'd see waiting in a Chinese restaurant or something. And so there was very much on a par, I think, with probably a national serviceman. Probably the same age, I don't know.
How big were they?
Varied. They certainly wasn't all little small ones. We saw one or two. I remember one particular dead one that must have been about 6'5". It was enormous, some of them. And so it wasn't as small as what you think Chinamen are, generally. There was just ordinary young lads of 18 or whatever, of a normal build. Mostly slight build, we'll say, yes, but...
What did you think to their equipment?
I think they were very well equipped. I understand that they didn't have a great amount of weapons, but I believe that their clothing was adequate. They had these kapok things, which we didn't see in England. Well, sometime later in the 50s, when we first started getting anoraks over here. But yet the Chinese was wearing these anoraks long before they came to England. And the boots were soft and they appeared to be comfortable. And their headwear was fair, like fair caps. So they appeared to be pretty well equipped, really, I would have thought.
And their clothing. And their weapons?
The weapons, I think there was a shortage of weapons. They had these burp guns, what they used to call burp guns, with a very high rate of fire. I understand that these was a little bit temperamental and weren't very accurate. Although there was, I think, pretty murderous at close range because there's such a high rate of fire. And I think they were pretty accurate with their mortar bombs. There was had to be respected. If you put your head over, there would be a mortar. So there was obviously watching all the time. So you had to treat them with a great deal of respect, I think.
So was this Chinese attack on the Hook of May 1952 a total failure then?
I think it was a total failure, I would have thought, as far as they were concerned, yes. It certainly failed. Whether they regard it as a total failure, I can't see how they could regard it as anything else, really. Because they withdrew the following day and they never made... We fully expected them to make an attack the following night, but it never materialised. And so they withdrew completely and they never attacked the Hook again because peace was declared in July, wasn't it, I believe.
53, I think peace was declared.
Yes, well, we're talking about 53 then. Have I been giving you the wrong dates?
You said May 52.
Well, it'd be May 53 then, sorry. I can give you all the dates if you wish. I've got it in the book somewhere. Well, peace was declared then 2 months later. They never attacked the Hook again. And so I would think as far as they was concerned, it was a total failure. Got to be, yeah.
What was the sight that greeted your eyes the next morning at dawn after this attack?
Everybody was shell-shocked. It was quiet. And we knew that there'd been a lot of men killed and wounded. And it was complete devastation everywhere. The sight that I'll always remember is... I've got a photo of it somewhere. Is at the bottom of the Hook. They were bringing all the bodies down. And they was all covered in black, like a black sheet. And the ambulance is coming and taking all the bodies away. That all sticks in my mind, down at the, what they call the Jeep Head, which was at the bottom of the Hook where the road finished. This area, absolutely covered with bodies.
Were these Duke of Wellington bodies?
Well, most of them, I would think, yes. Duke of Wellington and Chinese. I say most of them was covered inside of a black body cover they have, which was made specially for the job, I think. Looking out the front line appeared to be bits of bodies over the place, in the wire, fastened in the wire, bits of clothing. And a complete devastation. And all this wiring that we'd spent hours and hours putting down, it was all blown to pieces. The slip trenches was absolutely flattened. I think everybody was certain that there was going to come again the following night, so for some reason they had to. We had to be relieved, because we'd lost so many men, that we had to be relieved the following day. And we were relieved by the Royal Fusiliers. And the worst moment of my life, I remember, was that I was just about getting ready to go, which was about 4 o'clock the following day. And I was called to the command post. And the officers told me that I would have to stay as a rear party, part of a rear party, which was to take the advance party of the Fusiliers, take them on patrol. Well, there wasn't an advance party of the Fusiliers in this particular case, because they decided to pull us out and pull the Royal Fusiliers in and block. We had no time for advance parties. But we had to have a rear party to stay on the hook, to show the Fusiliers all the various patrol points, etc. And I was told I had to stay behind to take a patrol out, which was the worst time. That's the only time I was really frightened. But nothing happened. It was a very, very quiet night. They never did anything, the Chinese. I always think that if they'd come again the following night, they could have probably achieved their objective. But they never came. Nothing happened. It was very quiet. I took a patrol out, absolutely petrified all night. But nothing happened. Very quiet.
Whilst the Chinese attack was going in on the hook that night, how frightening was it?
Frightening, but yet at the same time you didn't have time to be frightened. There was so much going on and so much to do that you'd no time to be frightened, really. You never thought about it. I said, but he was 18. Now, I would probably be very frightened. But at the time, I think everybody was frightened, obviously. You've got to be frightened, but you just got on with it. You didn't think about it. You didn't dwell upon it at all.
During that attack, were people in your company being hit all around you?
Not on my particular section. No, I don't think we lost. I don't think we lost a man actually that night. We lost a few leading up to it because we were shelled almost every night. And I recall we lost an officer. We had a few wounded, and one killed in our particular section. But this was a couple of nights before the actual attack. But on the night of the attack, I don't think we lost anybody.
So how many casualties were there to your company, do you think, to C Company?
Company, our company, I don't know the actual company casualties at all. I think the battalion was around about 200, 250, I believe, killed, wounded and missing, I think.
Out of a battalion strength of, what, 900?
Yes, a normal battalion, yes. I don't know, the statistics are all down there somewhere in various books. I can't tell you off top of my head what the exact casualties.
During that Chinese attack, did you run out of ammunition to the Bren guns?
Yes, I believe we did. Yes, we did. I remember having to go back to the command post and bring in another box of 303s. It wasn't a major problem. We did run out, but that was only because we was using so much.
But the Chinese weren't directly attacking your position on the sausage.